You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, have pen and paper ready to take copious notes. You're going to need to take a lot of notes tonight. This broadcast is on escape, evasion, and camouflage. Escape, evasion, and camouflage. I will not tell you the name of our guest speaker, but this was taped at one of our conferences. And those of you who were there will remember this. Those of you who were not missed an awful lot of good information. Without any further ado, because there's a lot of material that's going to be covered, we will now get to it.
That's going to happen, and many will, but I think the odds are against me because I'm not going to knuckle under, and you can't enslave a free man or woman. All you can do is kill them, and I'm not going to be a slave, and I'm not going to be knuckle under tyranny, and I'm going to resist. I think that's the... By the way, I'm teaching your students that in high school. The subject's rather serious, and I want to stop preaching and get to it. I want you to know that knowledge is what you need. Knowledge is the key. It's not the pistol. It's not the fancy stuff you see here. Knowledge brought me to buy some of this stuff and modify it in ways I saw fit. You can do the same. What you need is knowledge, and what you need is use and experience with what you have. More than likely, a fellow with a .22 rifle that runs a trap line is more effective than a big expert like myself that's not out there every day doing it. I used to do a lot more than I do today. If you're fat, you're out of shape, you're overweight, I do something about it, but that doesn't mean you don't have a mind. When you get in an escape and evasion situation, I want you to make them pay for doing to you what they've done, for taking our country away from us. And I'm going to try to tell you some ways to do that. Your chances of living are diminished. When you actively support causes like this one and publicly come out of the closet, and I've tried to hide at times in my life, but this is the right thing. I'm doing the right thing today. You're doing the right thing today by being here. And it's time that people get up on a soapbox and talk. We all have our expertise as a doc today. Showed you, and we need people like him. He's a great guy. I'm thankful that our founding fathers didn't hide,
And one last thing I will say, if you're going to bury your guns in the ground so they don't get confiscated, what's it going to take for you to dig them up and use them? I would advise you, I'm breaking my own rule. Rule number one is maintain a low profile. Don't just spout off at the mouth. Don't just say, I have lots of firearms. You'll get robbed. Many things can happen to you. Keep your mouth closed. I would organize my resistance and any groups that I belong to at this stage of the game along cellular theory. I don't have time to talk a lot about it, but the French Underground and the Communists used it very effectively in World War II and many of the guerrilla warfare fights that have gone on the globe. Basically, you have a group of leaders in one cell, one man will have a contact in another cell, and there'll be several there. He'll only know one person and how to contact that person. May not know phone numbers. Stay off the telephone. Don't talk on the telephone about this type of stuff, or it will be used in a court of law against you, a court of alleged law. And I would build my organizations along cellular line. If I were in an organization, I would have done that. Another rule, rule two, get out of the cities. I did that in 1978, fresh out of college. I knew my professors weren't teaching me the truth because I'd seen the truth and the truth set me free. I was a history major and I just kept asking, well, why is that so? And after a lot of research, I found out why it was so. I would urge you to get out of the cities. That's what the New World Forces want. They want to control that. That's where the manufacturing is. That's where the booty is. That's where the population is. Get out of the cities, whatever city. I can't emphasize that enough. Get out of cities. The international forces are much more like a single-shot rifle than a shotgun. Many people overestimate them. They have tremendous resources, but their memory is short. If they find out who you are and if they actively track you, they can get you. They have the resources to do it. But if you keep somewhat of a low profile, let leaders take the heat in your cellular groups. And I stood up in this area, so are some of the other people, and protect those people that have been vocal. Not everybody has to be. You need safe houses. You don't need a bunch of talkers. You need safe houses, workers, doers, that type of thing. I want to tell you something else about getting out of the cities. When I was in Alaska hunting Gull sheep, the second sheep I hunted, how am I going to say this nicely with children in the room? I drove down a highway, and there was an operational house of ill repute on the side of the road, and there were planes landing at it all over. And in Alaska, that crime is illegal, just as it is in Arizona and California. But this one was operating. I mean, they weren't making any bones about it. It was there, and anybody in nine counties could see that it was what was going on, and there's only three really major highways in Alaska. The cops, the authorities, couldn't make their law stick because the people wanted it. There's not many women in Alaska. They couldn't force the issue. When I finally took my sheep, and there was like 19 sheep laying against the wall, the fish cops, the game and fish people came in. And in Arizona, if they see one animal, they'll check you and write you up and detain you and talk to you. And it's like you committed a crime, even if you have the permits and whatnot. In Alaska, they didn't check my permit and were very polite, said yes, sir, and no, sir. And the reason why is because 3 years previously, they found two game wardens in a glacier dropped out of a piper, a super cub, or some bush plant. Force makes people respectful. All power comes out of the end of the rifle barrel. Mao Zedong said that. It may sound bad to quote a communist, but it is the truth.
The golden rule of history is those that have the guns have the gold. One last thing, and that is your mental attitude. Women, men, children all need to have the attitude that I am going to live. I know I've said it. I don't have a lot of optimism, but I often look at the glass half full anyway instead of half empty or vice versa. I just see a pretty dark picture. But when you're in the field, if you live for nothing else, live to make them pay. Get tough. Recently, I had a horse that tried to kick another of my mares. When she jumped up to kick with both feet, she landed on a T-post and put one of these T-posts 15 inches into her hip and pulled the fence down. And the poor animal sat there dehydrated and lost about 6 gallons of blood. And I got on the phone to the vet, and I treated many horse wounds. And I said, oh, my horse is going to die. You know, and I was upset. My wife was upset. And the vet very simply said to me, he said, I've treated horses that have been hit by trains and live. I said, but she's lost 6 gallons of blood. And he said, they have 15. And that may sound flippant to you, but you see, I don't know how much injury a horse can take and live. You don't know how much injury you can take and live. Don't give up. It sounds simple, doesn't it? I'm not telling you nuclear science. I'm not splitting atoms here. Don't give up. Back to physical preparedness in your body. Try and stop smoking. Get at least your legs in shape. I run 4 miles a day. I weigh 275. I weigh 240 now. I run 4 miles 5 times a week. And if I were pursued by government troops, I don't think I'd have a hard time with your average Army trooper, National Guard, Barney Fife cop. However, if Special Forces could track me, if they could actually track me, because I'm good at losing my spine, but if they could track me, they would hunt me down and probably kill me, because they're young, they're dedicated, and they have the will to do it, and they're in better shape than I am. And I'm in pretty good shape for a 38-year-old man. I would encourage you to walk. At least get your legs in shape, because you can't evade nothing if you can't walk. Those of you that have physical problems in that area, I don't know. Just talk to your kids. Maybe they can carry it. Learn all you can about survival techniques. Firearms now, while the price is cheap. It's only money now. Later it's going to be your life. Later it's going to be your blood, your friend's blood. I've given you about 6 basic rules here. God gave you 10, so I've only given you 6. Try and live by some of those. They're pretty simple. Let's talk about captivity. Before that, we're pretty much peons. I doubt they'll take you captive. If there's some type of hostile situation that arises and it comes to shooting, I doubt they'll take you captive. They'll just kill you. You're a peon to them. You're a useless eater. You've heard that term. However, if effective resistance has occurred in your area and they think you're a leader of it, they may take the time to interrogate you. So let's say you've been taken captive. First, we got to talk about that. You'll probably not go to one of the re-education camps springing up all over the United States and old military bases, one in Winslow. If you live in the city, you might just be unlucky enough to get caught in a sweep as this progresses, as the conditions that are occurring in our society are going on, so maybe you would get one of those camps. But if they think you're a resistor, more than likely you'll be killed or you'll be taken in for questioning, i.e. torture and chemical treatments. It is believed by the governing authorities of the day that if they believe that you're part of the resistance and it's been particularly effective, they'll use drugs on you. It may take a while to get that talent into the area because not everybody, even doctors, know how to use the drugs when questioning people. You will tell them everything you know. Every single thing. You'll snitch on your wife. You'll tell them where your caches are if they bother to ask. The obvious answer here is if you're in a group, don't let people be taken captive, or they'll break this cellular thing down. If they catch this guy, they'll find out who he knows above them. Maybe he knows one person below him. They'll eventually break your organization. They will break you. And if you think all they'll do is chemically use chemicals on you, you're wrong. After they have used chemicals, sodium pentothal amongst the least of those, they will then come back and check to see if they were in error or you have been conditioned. Some agents have had chemical training so they can lie underneath chemical drugs. And just on the off chance that you're one of these type of people, they'll come back and use physical torture to find out if your story collaborates what you said under drugs. Just the threat of my wife taking away my roast beef is enough to get me to tell. Let's see. Expect if you're put into captivity to be malnourished. I mean, you folks know this. Look at our, despite what Joan Baez and Hanoi Jane had to say about our POWs, look how they were treated. Very few escaped. You're not going to see World War II great escape type things happening. We've come far above that. We know how to detain and keep prisoners. They'll malnourish you. They'll psychologically abuse you. And eventually, you'll tell them what they want to know. Your chances diminish to escape the longer you're held in captivity. So, without splitting atoms, you can figure out either don't become a captive or escape quickly. But what if they kill you? So what? That's better than what they're going to give you. If your daughter's taken hostage, or your son, and you know this type of thing will occur. For example, in Rhodesia, they used to teach the ranchers to shoot through the child and take out the terror. Hard words, hard things to do. But you'll save that child literal hell from the hostage takers. I want you to think about those hard realities. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying I want you to think about it. More than likely, you'll be transported out of your area. Groups should make every effort to recapture people before that happens. A minute ago, the guy that owns the store next door, his wife couldn't find him, misplaced him. We found out that he disappeared. There were people on it, working men, people that are working all over this county within several minutes. Because if you take one of our people out of here and they haven't committed a crime like murder or something, we're going to take you if we can. You'll not take our people. And Tim has that commitment, and I've given it to him, and he's given the same commitment back to me. So I want you to think about that. If you do, if you're in groups, you got to draw that kind of line. Someday that's going to happen here. Someday they'll go after some of our people. You need to stay on it. Intelligence of your area, you know it better than anybody. It's the most important thing you can do, and it should occur daily. Mr. Cooper's hour every night is a good way to find out intelligence. We use it to find out national intelligence, what's going on. We have people dedicated to that proposition. That's their job. We have people dedicated to local intelligence. Good jobs for people that don't work anymore, retired, can't work. They can still use their mind. Everything else fails, take your person's life before you let them fall into the hands. That's what you need snipers for. Don't let them fall into the hands of the enemy. And the government is your enemy. Our government. I think that's about it as far as captivity goes. I can talk to you a lot longer. There's a lot of games. I don't know if you've heard the story about the Vietnam pilot. He was an American pilot in Vietnam. Colonel. Captured. Shot out of the sky. And he was put in a POW camp. Became malnourished, physically abused, has told them many things. But he made him fight for every piece of information he got. And he made a little deck of cards because when he was urinating one day, when they took him out to bathe and urinate, a piece of paper blew through the camp. And he took it, and he had confiscated a piece of pencil lead earlier and drew cards and made a little tiny deck of cards. And that's how he passed the time. They found him and confiscated him. He trained cockroaches to race. They stepped on the cockroaches. Finally, he found out the only thing they can't really mess with is what goes on deep in my mind. He started playing golf, and he played golf every day in his mind at the base golf course. And he would picture himself opening up the trunk of the car, taking out the golf clubs, yelling to his wife, "Where's my this? Where's my that?" The whole nine yards. Very elaborate scenario that lasted hours. And he played golf every day, 18 full holes, fought every stroke through. And when he got released, and he made it back to the United States against his doctor's advice because he was malnourished, he went out and played golf. And at the course that he had been mentally picturing, and he shot 5 strokes under his best score, in a malnourished condition. That's the power of the mind and visualization. Athletes are starting to train thinking about hitting the backhand in tennis because you send electrical impulses down those nerves. They can mess with your body. Don't let them take your mind from them. Always want to escape. Let's talk about escape now. Escape early. Try often. Unto death. During the actual capturing process, even if you're bloody, even if you're hurt, that's the time. Escape when you're being taken out of transportation. For example, some prisoners right in our area being transferred from Oklahoma. These were hard cases, real prisoners, real criminals. Had to use the restroom. They said they had to use the restroom. And when the guard opened the door, even though they were handcuffed, they started urinating, but then they escaped. They just ran out in the middle of nowhere. They took their chance at freedom. 2 were still at large. 4 years have passed. The government had huge searches going on. They didn't find 2 of them because they took the opportunity. Carpe diem. Seize the day. Never give up hope. Try and escape when you're being taken to the prison, when they let you out. Try before they put you behind bars, because they have the technology to keep you there. I want to talk a bit about handcuffs. When you're handcuffed, if they think you're dangerous, it's almost SOP, standard operating procedure, to cuff you behind the back. I seen my son, who had suffered a car wreck, rolled his truck, and suffered a brain concussion this summer. He's fine now. We thought we might lose him. I seen him break a pair of these. He became very violent. He broke the emergency nurse's fingers, 2 of them, when she tried to hold his hand. He's not a violent child, but he had a trauma to the head. And different things happen when that happens. Handcuffs are meant to withstand pressure this way. They aren't meant to withstand pressure or torque this way. Some cheap pairs of handcuffs, and cops are human, they buy cheap things, will break. I've seen it happen this way. Work on them. It's going to hurt your wrists. Oh, well. Also, you should have a handcuff key on you at all times. I have one right here. It's underneath my belt, and it's held in by black tape. I have several handcuff keys. One handcuff key will generally fit most of your handcuffs. If you wear Western belts, which I imagine most of you don't, some of the loose weave ones, you can weave the handcuff key in there. Put it right here. I have one right here on me. If you handcuff me and you put my hands behind my back, I'll be able to get them out. I practice. It costs nothing to practice. It costs nothing. How many of you will do it? I have a razor blade underneath my belt buckle right here. I can cut bonds of any type. It's right here. You can't see it, but it's there. Other things you might use to escape bonds are simple box razors. They're flat. They're not illegal. They make halfway decent weapons if you should need to use them. Escape situations come on you like thieves in the night. You never know when they're going to happen. You might be clothed as you are now. You might be in full battle dress. You don't know, but you should have, you should be prepared. You should give it some forethought. I'm looking through here and picking out some ones I really think you need to know. If you're ever tied up, flex all your muscles and your belly. And men, most of us have that way. Flex them while they're tying you. It's probably going to earn you a fist in the belly or in the head. But when they tie you, most people don't know how to tie people up. And by flexing your muscles, women in the chest area, men in the belly area, you can make those bonds looser, just like a horse does. They push that belly out, and you cinch them up, and then when you get on the horse, the saddle falls off. It just happened to me. I ride all the time. So what I do is kick them in the belly for it to settle on. And if they're trained, they're going to do that to you. If they hit you in the belly, oh well. Always carry knives. Knives are cheap. You should have one big knife. Of course, you can't carry this day in your day-to-day affairs, but if you're in business situations, serious situations, carry a big one, because a knife, even in a woman's hand, scares people, and a big knife has momentum to take hands, fingers, head, all of those type of things. The bigger, the better. That's why some of your men like the Bowie, the Gurkhas, use big knives. If you get enough momentum behind them, they'll cut your head off. That's the best way to remove sentries, is to have a big knife and take your head completely off. Most people aren't that strong. Small knives in the back of the skull right there will do the same. You have to be strong, and you have to have practiced on something. There will be no outcry when you do that. If you slit somebody's throat, it makes a horrible gurgling sound. Probably not what you want when you're trying to remove a sentry. Sentries are hard to remove, by the way, because they're scared. It's dark. I don't like to be in the dark when I know bad guys are out there with sharp instruments. And if he isn't a dork, and there's some dork, he's going to be scared and he's going to be listening. It's hard to sneak up on. If you're in a car and they're transporting you, I knew when I was a young man, 14 years old, was assaulted by a homosexual, a much older man. He was hitchhiking, coming home from high school. I believe he was a sophomore or freshman, I can't remember. I knew the kid. He wasn't my best friend. And the guy pulled a gun on him when he got in the car and said, "You're going to do the following things with me." He said, "Yes, sir." And they went driving down the street. And he was smart enough, when he went over a wash in Tucson, to just open the car and jump out at 60 miles an hour. He was shot one time in the shoulder. Shoulder wounds are extremely painful, despite what you see on TV. But he's alive today, and he's not taken by a homosexual. Good for him. Jump out of the car. The worst that can happen is you die. Stories, especially women. I got to pee. I'm sick. Stick your finger down your throat if they're not looking, vomit. If you can, defecate your pants. Nobody likes that smell. Men, there's nothing that gets more prompt attention in a household than a baby that's done number two in their diaper. Nobody likes it. Get out of the car. Use any excuse. And men believe women. I've seen GPS officers. My wife said, I was speeding because I had to get to a restroom. I have speed. And the guy believes her. I could have said that, and he said, $100. Yeah, that's what it's going to cost you. I guess that's all I can... the imagination is just... I could go on and on. Use your mind. God gave it to you. Use it. Think up a way to escape. And if you can set something on fire or cause enemy harm, good for you. Evasion. Let's say now you've actually got away some way. You've actually done the right thing. And you're free. We need to keep you free. I would congratulate you for escaping, except you were kind of a dumbass to get caught in the first place. So where are you? Where are you at? You don't know. They take me in a car. I can show you some ways to find out. Maybe not where you're at, but which way are the cardinal compass directions. There's several. At nighttime, you probably all know this one. I'll be real quick for those that do. The Big Dipper has, let's see if I can draw one, 7 stars in it. That's 8. The Big Dipper actually kind of bends. The bottom of the cup here makes a line. 5 times the distance or the space between these stars, you will find the Little Dipper. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think it was 6, 7. The end star in the handle, 5 times the distance from this line, is Polaris. The North Star doesn't move. You know which way is north. If you know north and you paid attention in geography, south down at the bottom, west is to the left, east is to the right. That's not nuclear science. Mr. Cooper's telling everybody on the radio what a beautiful sky we have, and we do. Tonight, even if you know how to do it, go outside and find the Big Dipper. The Little Dipper's harder to find, but you can always find it if you can find the cup of the Big Dipper, the bottom 2 stars, make an arrow, 5 times this distance, you'll find the North Star. You can navigate off that. I've done it. Another thing you can do in the daytime, and why should you know the cardinal compass directions? I often don't use them if I don't have a compass. I just navigate in my head, you know. But if you don't know where you are, chances are you'll know in some direction why civilization. And one thing, is, women especially, and I hate to generalize, because I found women make much better students than men in this type of area when I've trained in firearms, combat shooting. Women generally say, yes, sir, listen, and then do what you say. And men say, hey, I'm bad, you know, and they don't listen. I would much rather teach women than men. But women, you need to know this stuff, and don't be afraid of the dark, and don't be afraid of our surroundings. There's nothing in this county that will hurt you except men. Nothing in this county except men and women will hurt you. You're much safer out there than you are in town. Oh, you may trip and sprain your ankle, you may break your leg, but at least you're not being raped by government troopers. You can walk in this area, as remote as most of you from urban areas might think it is, you can walk 1.5 hours in any direction, and you're going to come across a paved road. If you walk at a good clip, you can find civilization. Once again, you're back there with men again. And you may be in trouble once you hit the road, but don't be afraid. There's nothing out there. God made this for us. It's our safety. Don't be afraid of it. I'm going to show you two other ways. Well, one other way. There's one way called the watch method, and if you have a watch, there's two ways in the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere to tell where you are. I'm going to show you an easier one. I have some material that we can duplicate, and I can show you that watch method. I don't have time. I'll show you one thing called the shadow tip method. Many of you probably know it. You simply take a stick, and you let the sun hit it. I guarantee you, unless it's real cloudy, that this stick is going to cast a shadow. And where it casts a shadow, as soon as you set the stick in the ground, you put a rock. Now, we're not talking about sophisticated tools here, folks. You can do this. Where the tip of that shadow of that stick is, you put a rock. And you wait 15 to 20 minutes to a half hour. And the shadow will move. And now let's say it's here. Then, using the geometry you learn, you draw a straight line between those two. I can't even do it. It's not very straight. You draw a straight line to those two rocks, and you have an east-west line. And the first one's what, right? You remember? Which one's the first one? I got it in my notes. I believe it's west. And you can get your north and south from there. Those are two ways, and I'll show you a third one in a handout if we get some duplicating. You need to know that. East lies New Mexico. I'm going to walk. Doesn't matter if I'm in California. I'm walking. An organized resistance group in their area of operations should have caches. A cache is easily made out of PVC. That's what I use. I wouldn't use metal containers because you pick them up with metal detectors. Caches can be made out of these PVC pipes sealed at both ends, and you can put good things in there, like water purification tablets, maybe weapons, ammo, clothing, food. A lot of things can be put in them. You should have them in your area. Not everybody in your group should know about every cache. Each cell should have its own. Group caches in your state. A group in this area, in St. John's, should have a few around the Grand Canyon, around Phoenix, because maybe you'll be detained and taken to Phoenix, and maybe you'll escape, or maybe you'll want to go down there and kill some of the people that are doing this to us. Because oftentimes, offense is the best defense. And if you know they're going to launch a strike at you in St. John's, you found that out some way, maybe you need to take out the choppers while they're on the ground because they're much harder to take out in the air. So you should have caches. It's late in the game, folks. It's late in the game to start doing the shift.
One important caution on caches: get your phone and make the effort to get your phone. Do not buy commercially available PVC. It could be impregnated with anything that can be detected. Go out to the local hardware store and buy your own white PVC and impact. It may cost a little bit more, but it's not anything that's commercially available stuff to make.
That's correct. That's exactly right. Remember that you're going to leave a trail when you get out of that door. Don't worry about it for the first hour. Get the heck out of Dodge. Have any of you seen the movie with Tommy Lee Jones and the guy that played Han Solo, Harrison Ford, recently, where he escapes and he's the doctor, the fugitive, I think? Tommy Lee Jones convincingly says, a man can travel 3 miles, I believe it is, and that's up in the air, but 3 miles is a good figure. A scared person, even in the dark, when they run away from something, can travel, unless it's severely broken country, 3 miles. If you're in good shape, I can travel 6. I can run cross country 6 miles. Now, I'm going to pay for that, and I might sprain an ankle, although I've never had one. I might spring an ankle, I might break something, but I can get sick in an hour to hour and 5 minutes. Stay ahead of their net. The first hour is critical. They'll expand this circle. As each hour goes by, just as they do when they search for a lost child, child was lost here, each hour they'll expand their search. And you need to stay ahead of it for a while until the area gets so big you have some area to operate in. Tractors are rare. I'm not as good as I think I am. There are very, very, very few trackers left in the United States. There's some in Mexico. There's a tribe in Brazil that can scent you down and track you with their nose. There's two or three left that still have men that can do that. The Kalahari trackers are vanishing. I know a guy that tracked leopards all day long with a Kalahari bushman in front of him, and he hunted it. And he said that there was a little dog with these two wonderful black men. And he said they went for hours. And these guys ran from time to time. He'd get on the Land Rover. And he said he was kind of wondering what that little dog was going to do because a leopard was going to eat his lunch, you know. And all of a sudden, the dog barked once and ran this way. Leopards attack men. And when the dog barked once and ran this way, the two Kalahari bushmen ran this way too. And now it was him and the leopard. And he said it happened that fast. And the leopard jumped on him. He shot a 10-gauge shotgun. It ran the front quarter panel of the Land Rover. They still track that way. They still track deer in Mexico across hard pan and rock. There's still men that can do it. I can't. I can do some things, but I can't do that. Very few in the United States can. If they want you bad enough, they're going to call in trackers and they might get dogs. You're going to have to be awfully valuable for them to do this to, or you're going to have to cause them a lot of damage. They may not even do it at all because the area is contested. I'm thinking more about it in today's world. You have to understand, I'm not going to let them lock my people up, and I'm not going to let them take me prisoner, and that includes today, right now. That's why I'm wearing a gun. So, today they might use dogs. There's some things you can do against dogs. Backtracking, setting false scents, take an awful lot of time. If I was out in this area, I'd look for a lion shack, or a rancher's cabin, something of that nature. And I would tear off a piece of my camouflage blouse, and in the southwest you'll probably find some cayenne red pepper in that home, or in a ranch house. I would take that piece of cloth that I ripped off, several of them, and I would smear that under my arm or some other place where scent might develop strongly. And then I would set about a tablespoon of red pepper on that cloth and set them down my scent line where I'd walk at 100 to 150 yard intervals. Any dog that smells that won't be tracking much longer. And if you've ever watched dogs, and I have with bear and cougar hunting, they all get around and smell what there is to smell. And if you set several of them, you'll get most of them, and they won't want to track you no more. If in any of your caches you had some cocaine, it'll ruin tracking dogs forever. I do not advise you to have cocaine on your person in any manner, because you don't want to go to jail today. I advise you to stay within the law. But if something just happened to come your way and you got it into a cache, that would be a good use for it, because that dog will track never again. Use the same method with pieces of cloth. Walking in water is a good idea, except downstream in this area there'll be a lot of mud and stuff picked up from your prints unless it's already real muddy. Trying to break the track in some manner, climbing trees, jumping from tree to tree, hitting on rocks, jumping across crevasses or something that a dog can't cross, or a small one, and then you build a rock wall so it can't cross. Try to create time. Dogs can't track in the desert for very long. Heat ruins scent. So when people track desert lions in this area, you got to find it fresh, and you got to get on it, and you got to run hard. 6 hours and you're done. the same conditions that ground aircraft that would be searching for you, snowstorms, wind storms, high wind storms, rain storms, severe ones. I'm not talking about a sprinkle. Dust storms, those type of things that will put the aircraft on the ground that will be looking for you will also ruin track time.
Most of the helicopters that were in the pattern today are either the UH-60 Blackhawk, which is the state-of-the-art utility helicopter, or the older Vietnam-era UH-1 Huey helicopter. Both these helicopters have wind limitations. They can only start a certain wind within certain wind parameters, and as such, you really need to be aware of what the wind conditions are at any given time. Huey, as an example, has a starting restriction, a wind-up rotor restriction of about 30 miles an hour. The Blackhawk does not have that restriction. So you're shutting down one aircraft effectively, the other one can still start and operate. So it's something to be aware of. You need to be aware of when machinery that can come and get you and the types of things, like it says, that we keep them on the ground.
I'm a high-end member of Finn Lake. Every spray, like yourself said, every spray, will be for national reasons.
I imagine it would, because that's taken from this cayenne pepper sprays, and I imagine it would. I haven't tried it, but I just imagine it would if you injected that. Remember, he's going to run that in time, too. But cayenne is a more stable substance. But I imagine it would get him. And good for you if you have that. My question is, if you had that, why didn't you squirt your attackers with it, or the guys that kicked them? You know, maybe you took it from their body. Oh, I see. I want to tell you one thing about cayenne. Cayenne's a great, everybody ought to have cayenne. I eat it all the time, hope it gets rid of the red meat in my bloodstream. In the Southwest, it's real popular. One thing it's good for, and I observed this, shotgun wound in the stomach, close range, 12 gauge, 6 shots, hole about that big, man lived. His grandma dumped a half pound of cayenne pepper in the hole. It saved him. It wasn't sanitary. I don't think much could live in cayenne. They said it cut all blood circulation to the wound immediately. It's a good thing to have around, and it should be in your backpack. You can use it to flavor things. You can use it to discourage dogs. It can actually be thrown in people's eyes and cause some problems. And it can be used medicinally. So I have a little bit. Yeah.
Cayenne is great
for peripheral circulation, and also when you're very, very cold, it warms your body up. Along with the ginger, you need to eat a bundle of dry. Cayenne will give you trouble if you take more than 2 caps and you should eat with it, eat something. It'll do you a hell of a heartburn. I didn't know that it would warm me up, but I should have thought of that because I use all the time and I sweat when I eat it. Yeah. I'm not a doctor, and you notice I said this after Dr. McBride left. I didn't want him jumping with me. Okay, yeah. And you can always barbecue your boot and it'll taste good if you mean.
Tell each other what we know. I'll shut up. You guys can talk on that. get as much out of living for those 2 hours that you could possibly get. Don't tell him what you know. Ask him questions about what you know, because you're not going to see him. That's important. That's why I brought it.
3 methods attract him. 4 things I want to talk to you about. 3 methods. When you're downrange from the escape, they're going to start tracking you. I participated in search and rescues. I learned this skill because my best friend's son disappeared in the Coconino National Forest. And the Coconino National, the search and rescue group responsible for the Coconino National Forest also has the Grand Canyon, and they're a fine, fine group of men. They're not a roping club like most. Like most search and rescue outfits are. They're not a drinking club. They're effective, effective men. And I watched those trackers work, and I said, I will learn this skill someday, because I led a survival group we called a Red Alert Emergency, the only one we ever issued. And within 15 hours, we had men from all over the state on the site looking for that boy, and he was lost, and he was in trouble. And I love that little guy. And we eventually found him. We didn't find him. He found himself to the sound of a chainsaw and was found. But we were out there for about 48 hours. He did good. He drank water when he had to. The only thing he didn't do was hug a tree, which he could have done that. He wouldn't have really got lost. But I can remember leading those men and coming to a cistern. I hope you know what a cistern is, and full of water. And not wanting to look in the bottom of it because I was afraid I'd find that young man. So, but what I'm trying to say is I made a commitment myself. I would learn that skill. So if it ever happened to my boy or somebody else that I knew or my wife, I'd know how to do some of this stuff. And that's why I learned it. And some of it happened with Ray and some classes that him and I took together. What I'm going to show you is the first thing they'll do is make a track box. They'll find your track. Draw a box around it, and all this stuff is in an article right here and more, American Survival Guide. I wrote it several years back when I thought I could help the world, and it shows different tracking techniques, and they'll figure out your stride, figure out what your shoes look like, they'll figure out if you're limping, if you're hurt, if you're running. You can tell a lot if a person is scared by a track box. That's what they'll do, and that's what you should do. Quick off-side note, your children, when they're in areas like this, should have some kind of identifying mark cut in the back of their heel. You don't want to do this to combat boots that you're going to operate in and go after people with, but I would do it with my children's footwear. Mom, I've seen more search line trackers, and people say, ma'am, what kind of kids your son have? White pinches. And that's something. I had mothers that couldn't remember what the kids had. Pressure and stuff does that to you when you're under, your kid's gone. By the way, that little boy's father, a strong man, was out of it by noon. And he could run long distances. He was out of it by noon, overcome with grief and worry. So mark your children's shoes in case they get lost, so trackers can find them. Okay? We're going to make these boxes, and they're going to know a little more about you. There's several patterns they'll use. The first thing they'll use is called a cross cut. And it looks like this. And they'll try to find your sign. Let's say here's your trail. And they'll try to pick it up that way. It's just a system of interlocking L's. Those aren't big distances. At first, they can be 10 to 15 yards apart, and they'll expand as you cover more territory. One person should do this, because if you have two, you'll mess things up. That's how they'll find your track. Once they find your track, then they're going to do this. They're going to use a method called a cross cut. Let me switch pages. Or cutting for sign. This advances searches quickly. Let's say they determine, they know you walk from here to here. They're going to get a search team at your last known spot, and they're going to run a bunch of men down the direction. They can tell that by your boot unless you walk backwards. And if you walk backwards on me, I can tell you've done it. Most trackers can. A good tracker can tell if you're walking backwards. They're going to walk a bunch of men this way, and they're going to start sending men out at 90-degree angles like this, so many yards apart, looking for your track ahead of you. Do you see the benefit here? When this guy finds your track, they're going to say, okay, we found his track here. If this guy finds your track, they advance everybody to this point. You see how they're picking up space and eating up the distance on you. They're using their numbers effectively. That's why doubling back and all that stuff, unless you're really good, doesn't work too well. Unless you want to play with them. I don't know if I'd play with them. It kind of scares me. I think I just get out of Dodge. Anybody know the best defense against a knife attack? Run like hell. If this young lady right here in the blue skirt pulled a knife on me, I'd run. I outweigh her by a lot of weight, but I'm afraid of her. Run. Get out of Dodge. Another good method that you can use is called the circle cut. Some have called it the circle jerk because they don't know how to use it. It requires skilled people. And what you'll do is they'll send from a known spot where they've either found your track, faint track, they'll send men out in a 360-degree area, circle, each person with a compass. This takes trained people walking down these azimuths they've shot. This covers a large amount of territory. They'll use this against you. Why am I telling you this? Because if you know what they're doing, maybe you can come up with something. Maybe you can come up with something to delay the hunt, to delay the trackers. Radios and aircraft really accelerate searches. If you can take somebody's radio and not let them know about it, you're in good shape. You're in better shape. Stay undercover. I'm going to talk more about aircraft in a minute. One last thing about searching. If you ever get involved in a search in a friendly effort, you should. How do you learn these skills? You don't have to join the search and rescue team. Just tell them you want to participate in some searches. You hear about one, show up. They'll use you. That's how I learned. Doesn't hurt you. Search for an hour or 2 hours.
It's been a while since I've seen a truck across the line. Go away and then here and see that.
Sure. Sure, and I'll get to a little of that. You can try to do all kinds of things. But remember, if they drop people off here and they can cut that sign here, they can tell everybody, come up here, boys. We're putting a chopper down. Everybody come up here and we're going to start here. They may fly men in, fresh team. Stay on the rocks. Try not to make tracks. You probably won't have to face dogs. They're scary. One last thing. I want to tell you a story. The guy that trained me how to track, who appears in his eyes, told me that I think it was in 1978 he was called out on a search and he was on a deer path tracking a lost little girl, and he came to a fork in the trail and he took a right. They never found the girl until a year later. He was on the same trail. This time he took a left and found her 100 yards down the trail.
You're listening to 101.1 FM Eager. This is WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. This is the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
That's the kind of thing that happens to trackers. And I just want to tell you, if any of you get interested in it, it's not an easy profession. I think he had to live with that for a long time. Night tracking. Sounds possible. Very easy. I prefer it to day tracking except for one thing. You got to use a flashlight. And at night, people see light and they're apt to shoot at it. But if you can track in large teams with security in front of you or to the side of suspected paths, and it's hard to do. It takes training because a lot of times you have people walking across your trails that you're trying to track. You can take a flashlight. These are the best. Everybody should have one. They have red lenses so you don't ruin your night vision. Back in the back, diffuse lenses for map reading. And at about a 20-degree angle, about like that, you can see this is like picking cotton. It's not going to be comfortable. You can cast those tracks in relief at night, pitch black. And what happens, I think they learned it from old cougar hunters. Cougar hunters will go out in the morning, and in the snow and in the mud, they'll flash those truck lights on the side of the road. And you can actually see tracks better when they're cast into relief. Tracks are hard to see at noon because there's no shadow on them. I'm not saying it's a cure-all, but you can track at night. I've done it. Ray's done it. It can be done. I've seen women become very good at it. This isn't nuclear science, once again. The only thing is you have to keep your night vision intact. Don't shine flashlights in your eyes, that type of thing. I would urge you to get this article. We'll make some copies if Mr. Cooper or somebody can do that. It's May 1990, Volume 12, Number 5, American Survival Guide. I know they have back issues. I'm going to talk about the 3-6 distance estimation method now. And I know we're wandering a little bit off of escape and evasion. This could come in handy to you just in the field, but it's a neat little thing, and I think I'll show it to you. Yeah, I can draw it quicker if I had the article. There it is. With 3 sticks, and they need to be longer sticks, you can find how wide something is or how far across something is. If you can't pace it, if you ask me how far it is it to here to the door, I'll tell you in a minute. I'll walk it. I'll tell you approximately how far it is. But if you have a canyon, why would you want to know this distance from here to here? Maybe you want to string a 3-row bridge and you need to know how much growth. Maybe you need to shoot a deer here because you've seen it feed there a lot of mornings. Hunters, you might want to do that. There's lots of different reasons for wanting to know how far it is across an object that you can't pace and, you know, you don't have surveyor's tools with you. What you do is you fix on a landmark on the far side of the canyon. You call it point A. Don't put a stick in there. You can't. Point B is where you're at. That makes a straight line. At 90 degrees to that line, folks, we're getting into applied geometry here, so if you did good geometry, you can figure this out. I didn't. At 90 degrees to that line, you walk how far you think that is in your mind. If you're an underachiever and you guess a 400-yard canyon at 30 yards, it's no problem. If you guess it too long, it's no problem. But try to guess how far it is and walk this distance. If you said 400 yards, walk 400 yards and put stick one in the ground. There's stick one. We put it right there. Now, whatever distance you walk, walk it again at a 90-degree angle to your first line. Whatever you walk, walk it again. 400 yards, 30 yards, whatever it was, walk it again. And you put stick two. Now, at a 90-degree angle, the opposite direction away from the canyon, walk and look at stick one. And when you can line stick one up with point A, the far side of the canyon, you'll have a line like that. And I am here to tell you folks that now all you have to do is walk from where you are, where you line this up, the hypotenuse of two triangles, right triangle. And I'm here to tell you that this distance is the same as this distance. You can't walk this one, but you can walk back to stick two, and you've got the distance of that canyon. And you can then say, if you want to build a three-rope bridge, if it's 45 yards and the canyon's deep, and maybe you can get a rope up to the other side, you can say, I need 3 times 45 feet of rope. It's a good thing to know, and I use it all the time to tell my students, my at-risk students, that yes, math does work for everyone. I don't know why you'd need that in an escape and evasion technique, but I wanted to show you that so you'd be impressed. The guy that taught me that said he learned it from the Kalahari Bushmen. I think he learned the geometry class in the line. By the way, if you want information on that, if you want to see that, I got more fan mail off of that one article than I ever did on all my other articles. July 89, volume 11, number 7, American Survival Guide. By the way, I don't make any money on these matches. I'm going to talk real quick about water. If you live in the Southwest and you don't know how to find water, I can't teach you today, and shame on you. You're walking useless eaters. You've got to know how to find water. I can tell you that you need water purification systems. Tim can talk to you more about that. It protects you against Guardiolambia. I think, did I say that right, those of you that, they call it Guardia. It's a cyst. And in some instances, boiling won't kill it. But filtration will. And livestock carries it, and in this area, they have grazing going on everywhere, and all water is suspect. That's just how I operate. All water is suspect. If you get it, it's hard to diagnose, causes diarrhea, and in a field setting, an escape setting, an extended escape setting, it's going to kill you. So be careful with your water. One quick thing I wanted to talk to you, is anybody from desert country around here? Okay. You've all heard of solar stills. Solar stills work, but generally you have to have a lot of plastic. You all know what a solar still is? I can't cover a whole lot. Basically, it's a hole dug in sand. You put a sheet of plastic over it, tile dirt here and here to keep the edges down. Put a rock here. Put some kind of straw out so you can drink out of the container that condensation will take down this plastic caused by heat and the moisture in the ground, and you can drink out of that cup. And I see people build little ones, build big ones in the desert, build huge ones, build a lot of them, if you have the time and if somebody's not chasing. To accelerate this process, most people don't think of this, take your survival knife or a big rock, remember I told you always have your survival knife with you, and cut up barrel cactus, any kind of succulent, any kind of anything that contains moisture. No, barrel cactus does not have a hidden reservoir of water in there that you can just lap up like you see in the cartoons. It has a mulchy pulp that tastes like a cross between iron ore and spinach or something. It's really bad. But it does have liquid in it. And I walked from the Mexican border to Casa Grande once with a hatchet and one empty one quart canteen, and we had to do a lot of this. Put succulent material in here, and the heat will condense it out, will leach it out. I found out one thing about desert survival, and that is your whole life, everything that you are, centers, not around food, around water. Immediately, within 1 hour, the civilization is stripped off, and you say, I'm going to die, and you need water, and I'm thirsty now thinking about it. So that's a quick tip. Crossing, get those filters. Every survival group should have a filter, especially the Katadyn, the big group filter, where you can pull up to one of these mud holes that cattle drink out of and just get with it. Because these filter straws, I've tried it in clean springs. At this late date, I wouldn't drink out of, you know, where cows are penned. Now, maybe I'd do that in another time, but I wouldn't do it right now. But out of clean springs, I've used those filters, and it's, I don't know, it's like sucking a bowling ball through a straw, a drinking straw. It's tough. It takes a lot of work to get that water through. Get one of those filters. When crossing roads and barriers, cross major roads at night unless you can go under culverts or small bridges. Remember that ranch gates can be booby-trapped easily and set them back just like you found them. Most ranch gates aren't open a lot, and they leave a mark, and the wood's drier. Put it back just like you found it if you have to cross the gate. If you have to cross the barbed wire fence, remember sound travels down that fence. Hunters, don't just jump across those fences and shake and stretch the wire. Do it quietly, because that sound will transmit to an animal or to somebody sitting on the fence or crossing it too, linearly in both directions for some distance. Metal hitting it, if you have a knife or a gun, makes it even worse. I don't know, you know the cannon shots in Star Wars? The sound when they would shoot those laser cannons out of the X-Wing fighters? All that was a big screwdriver hitting a guy wire on a foam pole. That's what metal sounds like when you hit it with another piece of metal when it's under tension like that. So be careful on fences. All the roads around your home, you should know where the culverts and bridges and stuff like that are. When avoiding, if you get in a situation with aircraft, I'm going to tell you some stuff that I think might help you. When you deal with aircraft and you don't, and you're not prepared to deal with it like surface to air missile, shoulder fire, you might be in trouble. Aircraft are not anything you want to mess with. The best way is don't get detected. When you're evading from aircraft that is shooting, firing rockets, God forbid dropping napalm, which is my personal nightmare. The reason why, a friend of mine told me a story about a Vietnamese, North Vietnamese, that had been hit with napalm and jumped in a big water thing. And that jelly stuck to him, and every time he'd go under, and he was wounded, he was hurt, the fire would be put out. And every time he would surface, it would start on fire again to get air. And a squad of American Marines watched him roast slowly. They didn't like the Vietnamese for some reason. But I don't like burning that. The napalm's nasty stuff. You can make it with Tide and gasoline. That kind of a poor man's napalm. But if the aircraft is coming this way, and it's firing 2-inch rockets, it's dropping napalm, it's shooting any type of automatic weapon, cannon, bullet. Mothers, you got your children. If there's good cover, you better grab it. You don't know if it's going to drop napalm, and cover's not going to help you. If it drops napalm, you're going to burn. If there's excellent cover, drop and take advantage of it. If you're in the open, evade perpendicular in any direction. It's hard to make an aircraft turn suddenly. They can use their control surfaces to make the nose of the aircraft go like that. But evade perpendicular. You're probably going to die, but remember this, you know, because it's better than running this way. The first thing they teach pilots is never strafe a convoy perpendicularly. You see what I'm saying? If trucks are moving in this way and you're a pilot, don't cross and shoot one truck and then turn around and come and shoot another truck. Come down the road and take them all out one pass before somebody with another aircraft shoots you. So that's the best way. I'm going to talk to you about some choppers for a minute. Avoid choppers, avoid helicopters if you can. They can stand on you until troops get there. Don't expose yourself to aircraft, even high-flying ones, because they spot you high and they kill you low. What'll happen is somebody will spot you high, some aircraft flying high, and they'll send somebody and fly NAP of the earth, real close to the earth, to get you. Why is that? Anybody know why they fly low to the earth, even against somebody as insignificant as me and five or six guys with deer rifles? That's right. That's exactly right. You don't hear it coming. Choppers are loud. There's only one chopper in the U.S. inventory, I think in the world inventory, that's quiet. And that's the McDonnell Douglas H-54 Apache, or 64, Apache helicopter. And among other things, it has a whisper mode, but it eats fuel, so they don't use it. And it's real quiet, even high. But that's how they'll kill you. Low to the earth flying, jets will do the same thing, because they're on you before you know it. The bad thing about flying low is you don't see as far. So pilots aren't going to search for you that way. They're not going to get low to the earth, they're going to get high to search for you. They're going to get low to the earth to kill you. Move when an aircraft passes this perpendicular line. If you take and cover, and you feel you have to move because this guy's going to circle around or whatever, move while his back is to you. Aircraft's hard to see out the back. It's called their six, and they're worried about it. So move while they're before they make that turn. Helicopters have the shortest distance between turns. Jet aircraft like Greyhound take big looping turns. Move here and find more cover. Because if he knows you were here, and we're talking about $1 million aircraft shooting a 98-cent human being, but if he knows you're here, he'll come back and get you. That's how I would evade and escape an aircraft. If you should want to shoot down an aircraft, good luck. I tried it against a drug smuggler along the Mexican border when I was hunting desert sheep. He was flying a camouflaged Super Cub, and I watched him for 18 days fly drugs in and out of the United States across the Mexican border with no markings on his aircraft, which is illegal. Of course, the government does it all the time with their black choppers, as you well know, but camouflaged Piper Cubs with no markings crossing military test ranges, and that's where I hunted my sheep, the same range they shot Top Gun in, that deserty country you've seen in Top Gun. And I watched him for 18 days, and it made me mad, and I thought, hey, he's a drug smuggler, and I'm going to do something about it. He was flying in restricted airspace, and he's flying in the shadow of some mountains, a range of mountains that ran north and south, perpendicular to the Mexican border in southern Arizona. You don't have to worry I didn't hit him. And the reason why is aircraft are fast, and I'd never shot an aircraft. I shot an antelope running, but aircraft are pretty fast. Lead them. If you hit them, you'll do damage, even jet aircraft. But you're going to have to lead them, and different aircraft require different lead time or leads, so I'm not going to tell you a lot about how much you need to lead them. One last thing, if you face high V helicopters, which is a Soviet helicopter, and you will probably see them. That's the big chopper in Red Dawn. That type of aircraft is vulnerable right below where the rotor shaft, here's the rotor, that's the part that makes the chopper fly. There's a hump. The Russians have conveniently painted a red star when they're in American or UN colors. I'm sure they won't have that shooting this star. For some reason, unless they've corrected it, the Mujahideen freedom fighters in Afghanistan said they had luck with against choppers when they were stable shooting into this area. I would only shoot an aircraft if he's shooting at you and you've evaded and he just keeps coming after you and it's a life or death thing. Otherwise, get out. They're not worth messing with. From underneath, you can sometimes hit the rotors and put them out of balance. And tail rotors are good things to shoot, especially with soft lead bullets like 45 bullets. Because what will happen is a lot of times that tail rotor, the bullet will adhere to that. It'll stick to it and it'll make it go out of balance. This is another thing that the Mujahideen, I can't say that word, came up with. Reflection is deadly and very visible for long distances. Men with eyeglasses, watch it. Frames are bad. Binoculars are horrible. Don't look into the sun. Even the coated ones that appear dark green will reflect light. So be careful about that. I would not allow anybody in my group, when we were letting the rubber meet the road and we were actually in a hostile situation, have a survival mirror. They're good now, but in bad situations, people playing with mirrors is an instant recipe for airstrikes. A lot of your prisons have motion detectors around them. Try to walk unevenly. Maybe like you're drunk or something. Don't walk in a pattern. If you can blend into with a herd of animals, that's a good way to escape motion detection. The border has sensors placed all along it to detect that. I'm going to talk about the principles of camouflage. Movement is the easiest way to be spotted. I have spotted deer at 1 mile because they switched an ear. And I didn't see him except I saw something move through a spotting scope. Avoid movement. If you must move, do it slowly, do it unevenly. I have had the opportunity to watch trained snipers move. It's unbelievable how they do it. They move unevenly, they move slowly. It may take them a long time to simply move one arm forward. But if you're being observed, you have to move that way. Reflection, I talked about it, it's deadly at long distances. Contrast, and here's where I'm going to start talking about different camouflage patterns. Your camouflage should be new. I know it's neat to look like you're an Army Ranger and have faded camos, but faded camouflage is not effective. It's good to give the kids and let them play in or work around the garage. Floppy hats are good, protection from the sun. These bands here are not for shotgun shells, they're for foliage. This is called woodland camo. I'm sure a lot of you know it. It's good all around general purpose stuff. This is Desert Storm, desert camo. They have suits made of this. I think it sucks. Doesn't work. I don't like it. This is a good color in this country because the dead grass up here is this color. And if you're belly crawling, that's a good color to have. These are faded. I need to buy another pair. This is the best desert camouflage on the market. It's better than the new stuff. It's even good up here. It's called AFAT. Brigade Quartermaster sells it. They sent me some of this because I wore it on a hunt for them. When you're a freelance writer, it's a lot like being a race car driver. They send you free stuff and ask you to test it. And then if you're honest, you'll tell people about it. And if you're not, if you're a whore, you'll tell people to buy bad things. I don't do that. I did tell them that their material was weak and they needed to get better material, and they did. It's a good pattern, but the original material and string that they sewed the thing together with, the thread wasn't very good. But it is good now. It's the best in desert situations. Really, really hard to see. AFAT, A-F-A-T. And it's available from Brigade Quartermaster. It is not a military product. These are illegal. And the reason why is they were made in South Africa for South African troops during the apartheid thing. They're real good in this area because there's a lot of dead wood cut, and it's gray. It's good at twilight conditions. It's called South African. Twilight camouflage, I think. I can't remember what the name of that is. Black is always good at night. It should be a little darker than this. You don't want faded camouflage. Here's a good, I brought this with you. This is the first pair of camouflage I ever had. As you can see, my wife sewed on it a lot. Stuff, and they need more repair, and I hate to give up on a good garment like this. Anyway, I wanted to show you what faded camouflage looks like and what repeated washing does to camouflage. Detergent has brighteners in it. And if you can see some of this black, it almost has a blue sheen to it. Can you ladies see that? That's from brighteners. Almost as bad as yellow wax buildup. Anyway, the bad thing about that is it doesn't cause me a problem, but deer see into the ultraviolet. And that sheen, that blue sheen you see, looks like electric neon blue to them. It's kind of a light blue. So honey, you wouldn't want to wear these. Even worse is the Army has technology that will see into the ultraviolet, infrared equipment. And you really stand out when you wear this stuff. At Walmart, you can buy this product, and Kim may have it next door. It's called Sport Wash. About $7. And this stuff is called UV Killer. I'm not going to go into any further detail on this, except use it on your stuff after washing. Yeah, both of these are available at Walmart. That's where we got these. Tim may have it. I don't know if he does or not. You can talk to him about it. He does? Pick up some of it. It's a worthwhile investment. And ladies, you should put that stuff in, because I have looked through infrared equipment at this stuff, and they're right. You glow electric blue. Don't polish your boots. Combat boots, don't polish them. It shows up in infrared equipment. It looks like a fluorescent orange glow. It's not orange, but I mean, it's that prominent. There's no color in an infrared scope other than the monochrome green that you see. I didn't mean to say orange, but I mean, it's that noticeable, like a hunter wearing an orange cap. This is called Night Desert Linear D, and it used to be very hard to get. I found a guy wearing it at a swap meet, and I gave him $10, and he took it off his shoulders and gave it to him. Now you can pick it up anywhere Tim can offer to you. It's good against infrared equipment. It's not against starlight equipment. It's good against active systems, not passive systems. For those of you that know what that is, it is effective. It's as good as anything else at night against starlight equipment. And this is Tiger. I bought this from Tim. I wouldn't use it in this area. I would use it up around in the almost rainforest-like atmosphere we have up around Holly Lake and the ski resorts and the thick, thick pine country where you have ferns, a lot of shadows. This is jungle camouflage, and it's good in those areas. That's how you want your camouflage to look, that new. If you're going to use it, I didn't bring all my new stuff, but if you're going to use it, keep it that nice. Faded is just a bad idea. Camouflage is supposed to blob you into the environment, make you undetectable, break up your silhouette. Small camouflage, small patterns like this or like this, work best on human beings because human beings are small. You should use larger camouflage for vehicles, aircraft, boats, that type of thing. I'm not going to go in how to do all that. Use your head. If you've got a boat and you want to avoid detection from the sea, paint the part that's above the water the color of the land you're going to be in. Okay? Aircraft, if you're worried about people looking up and seeing you, paint it the color of the cloud, like grays. By the way, did you all know that Clinton illegalized ammo boxes and camouflage netting? Thousands have been killed in the States in just the last 24 hours of illegalizing. So I would expect to see this become illegal. He illegalized government surplus ammo boxes and camouflage netting. And like everything else, they say, well, you grow drugs under camouflage netting. That's the excuse. You can find drugs with camouflage on them. I'd expect this stuff to be illegal in another year, 2 years, or shorter, maybe shorter. One thing, if you're working on positions that you're trying to camouflage, like your camp, and you're cutting foliage to put around that camp, keep it fresh. I talked to a F-105 Thunder Chief wild weasel pilot from Vietnam, and his job was to fly around mountains and stuff where they knew they had North Vietnamese anti-aircraft positions to shoot down jets with. And his daily job was to go out there, find them, and destroy those in place and finish jet. When he told me about being chased by SAM missiles, he just broke out in a sweat. He said one time his tennis shoes turned green from the body perspiration when one of those things got on his tail. And he started doing evasive maneuvers trying to get away from it. That was their job. Only the best pilots really got into it. You had to be real gutsy. He said the best way to find North Vietnamese emplacements was looking for dead foliage. People had neglected their camouflage. Don't do that. If you're going to cut it, keep it fresh. If you're planning an ambush and you're going to be there 4 days to ambush a truck convoy, or you're going to ambush something else, make sure that you freshen that camouflage. This is all under contrast. When you're putting face paint on, use the blacks and flat surfaces, the darker colors, the dark browns, the lighter colors like light greens, use them on the ridges of your face, cheekbones, chin, break it up with. Also, the black under your eye will help the sun reflection. If you don't have any face paint and you're escaping and you're evading and all that stuff, cow manure is great. A little wet cow manure, don't get it in your eye. It'll work. Mud will work. If you don't have any water, spit will work. Get something to break up your face. It's very visible in light at night. Moonlight, even. It's very visible from the air. Wanted to talk about one thing under contrast. That's one of the principles of camouflage. It's called texture. I'm proud of it. I made it with my own needle. They're commercially available. It wasn't when I made mine. It's called a ghillie suit, and I know a lot of you men have heard of them. I made this with two hammocks that I put together. Two net hammocks, real cheap ones I bought at a local discount store. And I tied them together. You see that net under there? That's the hammock. It would have never supported me. It cost $1.49 for each hammock. Then I took a burlap bag, cut it in strips, and dyed with red dye all the different pieces of camouflage. It took several loads. I dyed all the, and I still have bags of this stuff laying around to replace it with. This is my summer ghillie suit. These are hot. This is hot. This is the light one. Why anybody would want to wear it is beyond me, except that when you lay down on the ground and you put this thing on, it adds texture to you. Contrast, all this clothing is smooth. It breaks up your contrast, but it does nothing for your texture. This is from Sniper Technology. You ought to see these guys work. If you can get a chance to read... No, what's the... Marine Sniper. That's the one, and who's advised him? I can't remember. A hat top. Yeah, that was kind of hokey. I think Hathcock is the guy's name. The book was written just recently, well, in the last 3 years, about him, and it's his story. Read it. I want you to read it and I want you to put yourself in that guy's position, because it'll scare the daylights out of you. He killed colonels at long distance. Let's see, where's my chart? Marine Sniper. And it's a good reading book. My wife loves it. It's like a thriller. It's good. It's not one of these dry books. And it's Carlos Cathcart, a former 1,000-yard shooter at Camp Perry, won the event, a boy from Arkansas or Oklahoma, and he had 100 confirmed kills to his credit. One of them was a corps commander. three or four stars in it. NBA snuck within 1,200 yards and sniped him dead. God, I love that.
3 days to make that throw, by
the way. Yeah, I did. 3 days on the ground. He ran across the Viper at eye range and just sat there. I have done some of this stuff, and believe me, it's tricky. I've had people searching for me and been hidden in a good position and had ants start crawling in my nose. You just need to let them crawl. Go do some of this stuff. It takes some experience, but that's better than exposure. Always remember what the careless movement will do to you. Let's see here. Oh, I wanted to show you something. Next principle. This is called an audio aid. And what that was a coyote call. That is not the sound of a female coyote wanting to mate. That is the sound of a dying rabbit. That's what they sound like. And if you don't believe me, take a rabbit and put vice grips on his toes, and he will make that noise. You can simulate it with your hand. But I called in coyotes that way. And I did that to show you what noise will do, because as soon as you do that, if coyotes haven't been called a lot in the area, they'll start running. Lunchtime! It's the same with enemy troops. If they hear rocks fall, if they hear you go, oh, damn, they're going to be coming after you. Be quiet. Don't move. Defend. And this is something often avoided by people that talk about camouflage or they just don't think it's important. The first deer I ever killed was because, and I was a young boy, I smelled something and I thought it was a skunk and I didn't want to step on it. So I was alert and I started looking around. And 70 yards away there was a mule deer spike. And he was in the rut and they emit a smell. Javelina emit a smell when under stress. So their little babies, because they're half blind, can follow them. There's mama. And they just run down the central. There's still men that can do that. Keep your bodies washed. I know when you're in the field a long time, that's hard. If you can do it, try to stay clean. If you hunt, stay clean. Don't pump gas before you go out on a mission. Don't ever do that, because gasoline smells, and it can be smelled. I can smell it. I can't hear real well, but I can smell real well, and I use my senses. The enemy said in Vietnam that many of the Anglos smell like dead meat, because we eat a lot of it. Conversely, good American point men said the Vietnamese smelled like molding or decaying rice, because they ate a lot of that. You smell even on your best day. So if you're hunting or you're in an escape and evade situation, you may not be able to watch, but you certainly can with modern conveniences, and if you're going to do something, and we'll leave whatever that is to your imagination. One last thing I'm going to talk about is thermal. It's the coming thing. Cops are using it. They're spotting people at night with just off the heat of their body from choppers. I've seen it on 911, call that show 911, Narc on Your Neighbor. I've seen that. It's a real popular shows these days, so the police don't have to do their jobs. And they just found all kinds of guys, gangsters, laying everywhere, using that technology. Tanks use it because tanks throw up a lot of heat, and you can use thermal through smoke. It's the only one that will go through smoke, heavy, dense clouds of smoke. In tank warfare, they emit smoke on purpose to conceal themselves in their formations and their movements. That's the only one that will work against smoke. How do you avoid that? Thermal imaging. Stay around hot rock. There's plenty of rocks in this area. They absorb heat from the sunlight. They'll stay hot all night. Stay around those. Get in amongst game, livestock. They also emit heat. One of the Hillside Strangler, one of those Northern California guys that went deranged and killed a bunch of people, they spotted, using thermal imaging from a satellite, his graveyard. Because what happens when you put a body in the ground? Decays and decays cause heat, and it was a shallow grave, and they were arranged nicely. And that's how they spotted it, and that's how they caught it. If you're building shelters under the ground, you better think about getting them deep, camouflaging them with rocks on the surface. Because in the wintertime, you'll want to heat them. And a 40-foot shipping container, overseas shipping container, if that's what you use, and you heat it up with a stove or you heat it up with something, is going to emit a lot of heat. And they have satellites for this purpose. That's how most of the new swimming pools are spotted in the Southwest that haven't paid taxes on them. They don't use thermal imaging, but they use satellite technology to spot the new ones. They have a map of the old way it was, and they get a new map out. Say, oh, there's a new pool. He didn't file a building permit charging. Go ahead. Okay. I think you're going to have 16-foot earth on it to protect you against all situations. In this area, it gets cold when you're 20 below. I want you to think of this area wrapped in snow. That's a lot of earth. You might be able to get by with 12. I don't know. This isn't my field. This isn't my expertise. It's just something I want to plant in your mind. Go find how deep that is. Let's see. I wanted to talk about the guns for a couple of reasons. If you're going to be Carlos Hathcock and you're going to shoot somebody and you're going to sneak up on them, I'm going to show you with Tim's magic handkerchief, which you can buy right next door, how to avoid disturbing the ground with this muzzle flash. This muzzle emits a great deal of gas when the weapon is discharged. At night, you're going to see a small flame come out of the barrel. If this was not on here, the splash suppressor, you would see a garbage can lid size flame. But with it, you're just going to see a small flame. But it throws gas in all directions. You can just see how that works. Lay before you shoot. If it's just a one-shot deal and you have time to prepare, lay that on the ground. Dust won't rise. Leaves won't come up. That's not nuclear science, folks, but it is camouflage. Just lay your shirt, lay any kind of cloth down on the ground, and that will cover your muzzle signature. And if you don't think people are going to see it, you get shot at, and watch how fast you look for the guy shooting you. This is a shotgun with the same device. The guy that's done this for me will be talking to you. I'd advise you to listen to him. He's by far one of the best authorities on firearms I've ever met. He knows more than most people forgot. This is a choke tube, and the holes in the middle, that you see those holes, that's a flash suppressor. A shotgun throws out a huge muzzle flash at night. It is so bad, what happens when you look at night? At night, you look at bright objects. What happens to your eyesight? It degrades, and you get night blindness for a while. One shot, you can't see anymore, so you can't shoot at the things you want to shoot at. You can't see them. This reduces it about to the size of an orange at night. In that camouflage. What?
It's a shotgun grade.
This is a Mossberg 500. If you can get a Remington 870, that's fine. The reason I chose these is they have twin fly grills. You see the steel hooked onto these rails? There's one on each side. Ithacas don't have that. They bend real easy. Because under combat pressures, you start tromboning that pump thinking, I gotta get shells out here, I gotta kill these guys. And you just keep cycling it, and you throw them so much force, you'll bend those fly grills and your shotgun won't work. Ithacas will do that unless you're real well trained. And I've never killed a man with a shotgun, so I imagine if I ever have to, I want a strong weapon. 870s and Mossberg 500s both have them. Mossberg 500s are cheap and still available. We've got some time. If you've heard of the MPL-RPS, this is one built in a It's not a 375, it's a smaller caliber.
It's a Magnum.
It's a Magnum. I wanted to show you this because it has a compensator on the end of it. Ladies, it's not the same as that flash suppressor. That has holes all around it. This only throws gases in two directions, both up. At a 45-degree angle, see those holes? Gas is going to come out of there. It's unloaded. Okay? When you fire with this, you don't need that handkerchief. It's going to throw the gases up in the air. We built it that way. But if you're underneath a cedar tree, in this area, cedar trees pollinate and have lots of dust. And if you've ever seen them blow up, it's a huge signature. They have dust, just dust on them too. When you fire this out, you can feel it if you're standing next to it 20 feet away. And I mean, it's not a mild force. It's a heavy concussion of gas that comes out of there. So you're going to have to watch what's above you. It's so powerful, they call it a compensator, because most guns, when you shoot them, go this way. You've seen your husband shoot a gun and the barrel goes like that. This gun, when you shoot, goes this way. About that far. And it's a Magnum. It's a Magnum weapon. I'm not going to tell you the caliber in case I ever have to use it against somebody. But he can build them in all calibers. I'm not giving you a spill for Scott, the gunsmith, but he can do wonderful things. By the way, I'm waiting my new scope. I'd want a bigger scope on this. Don't ever have a scope in the field or a gun in the field when you're worried about losing your life or somebody shooting you that is blue steel. I would camouflage that with burlap or something. Tape. I hate to use tape because it gums up the surface, but I'd do it if I had to. Don't use blue steel in combat. I've seen deer not go down the direction they were headed towards the hunter who was perfectly steel because they saw the sun glisten off a blue steel barrel. Use parkerization. It's cheap. By the way, I expect I could probably, the gun's capable of 1,200 yard range accuracy. I'm not that good. I'm a good shooter. I'm probably second, third best in the people that I hang around with. But I won't say first. But all I can say is that I can't hit that far. It takes a trained shooter that devotes a lot of their life to do that. Let's see. Last minute things I want to tell you about. Tripwires and booby traps. Look for them along choke points and trails. Tight spots. That's where they'll put them. Knee to groin height. They generally don't put them low because you can step over them accidentally. Look for light glistening off of them. Look for straight lines in nature. Always look for straight lines in nature. Never look for the whole deer. Never look for the whole human being. Look for the hand. Look for the ear. Look for the butt. Look for the foot. You'll never see a camouflaged foe, hardly at all, unless he silhouettes himself against a backdrop. You'll never see the whole target. You'll see parts of targets. I know a man that spotted a ram with 5 inches of horn at 3.5 miles. I was there when he did it. Better optic user than I am. I watched a man spot a deer at a mile by only the shadow. He saw the shadow because the deer was behind a rock. He could not see the deer. And he said, "There's a deer behind that rock," and I told him he's lying. But there was, because he spotted the shadow. Wind often exposes pit traps. The punji stick traps we were talking about earlier, wind often exposes those. Look for them in the bottom of trails. Be careful with the sides of trails. Look for dead foliage, because a lot of times the swinging gates you see on TV, and which require a lot of work and are stupid, and I wouldn't do it because I have other better ways to kill people if that's what I want to do. Those types of things take a lot of space, and they have to be camouflaged. Look for dead foliage. Be careful of holes in the terrain when you're escaping and evading that you can't see. How do you know that the little dip right behind there doesn't have 15 men in it? Act like a hunted animal, because you are. And if you screw up, it's your life. Be wary. smoke, dust, and noise can give you away. You can use them to your advantage. Rommel in the Second World War would drag behind his oldest trucks, supply trucks, bed springs and pieces of iron to kick up dust so the British troops would think that they were tank formations. And he was very successful with it. And they believed he had a lot more tanks than he really did. When operating at night, use the same techniques you use in the day. This is important. Just because it's night doesn't mean you can walk around. The night has become like daylight with the new KGB technology and night vision stuff that's coming on the market cheaply. $480 to $520 for night vision Starlight top grade binoculars, which are far superior to what the Americans make, and they're flooding the market. You should have a pair. They're called Starlight, and they're passive systems. And if you look through them, you see a chartreuse field. It's monochrome, but you can spot real well what's out there, and it's magnified three times. And this is available. Use your camouflage techniques at night. We've done this. This linear night D or any of this stuff, if you keep backdrops behind you, you're invisible, even more so than in the daytime. But if you're out in the open, you will be spotted. In times of war, always carry three knives into the field, a large one, two small ones. One ought to be a Swiss Army knife. The other could be just some kind of folder. Knives are easily lost under stressful situations. I've done it when skinning a game animal that cost $10,500 to pursue, stone sheep in British Columbia. And as I said, when I was going after that title, be the only man that shot the Grand Slam of sheep, which is a dubious title at best, some of that was real expensive, and HK helped pay my way because they knew it might save their firearm importation runs. Always carry a loaded and charged weapon on your person if your state law does not allow this move. Folks, it's time. I can't tell you any better. We're in trouble. Women carry guns. I don't want to kill anybody. I've sat here and talked about blood and death and decapitation. Human life is sacred. I honestly believe that. I swear on my Savior's name that I believe that. But I have the right to live too, free. In desperate times, never barter ammo. Never barter ammo. The bullet you barter may be the one that shoots you. If you must shoot in anger before general insurrection occurs, always recover your breath. Get rid of the weapon immediately. OJ got rid of his knife. If he did the crime, get rid of it. That's why I wouldn't use my top line equipment to go do that type of stuff. Because if you do, they'll track it down. And forensic evidence and police methods is very advanced today. You'll have the whole system against you. Tanks, armored personnel carriers, and even Humvees, that's a little replacement for the Jeep, now carry laser target devices for their main gun or anti-tank rockets. These targeting devices, these laser devices, won't shoot through steel, none of that stuff. But these devices, and our storms at Desert Troop did, Desert Storm, our troops at Desert Storm did this, will blind you and burn up your optic nerve. They can sweep you, and they did it on purpose. Our troops did it on purpose to expose raghead infantry. They did it on purpose. You can counter this with, I think, a $40 set of goggles that are available. Tim has them. They're hard to find because they're new. And if you're in the field, you should have eye protection. You just should, because things blow up, trees hit you at night. When selecting horses, I've got four more if you're patient. Purchase beige, buckskins, grays, and black. They blend in with nature. Stay away from paint. My wife has one, and she dearly loves it because it's pretty, and she looks like Dale Evans. Stay away from those type of things. People remember paint horses, too. If it's just an old sorrel red horse, nobody's going to know what it was. If they saw you, well, he was on a red horse. But if they say he was on a Palomino paint, you should have seen it. Well muscled, had a real nice head. I mean, pretty horses attract people's eyes. I told you not to shine your combat boots. Any watch that is a simple wind-up watch is not detectable in the field. Any coarse movement watch is. This watch is detectable in the field. It's a military watch. It's got a coarse movement. It's running on batteries. It's detectable in the field with proper equipment. They might bring that equipment to bear against you someday. Buy a simple wind-up watch. They're hard to find now. I guess it's an accident. I want to show you my pack real quick. If you need a good pack, Tim's going to wince when I say this. Big men stay away from Alistair. It hurts. It has to be modified. Short people can get by with it. It was made for Orientals and short men anyway. The military Alice packs are good, but for big men, and I'm one of them, they're tough, and you have to modify them a lot. My pack system is a JanSport freighter frame. You can buy all kinds of freighter frames. That's just the frame. You see the frame, not the bag. And what I did to that was put an internal pack frame, the screen bag on the pack, and the straps are underneath it. So what do I have?
Well, that's it, folks. I hope you were listening, and I hope you took good notes. And I hope you understand that that the information contained in this broadcast is for educational purposes only and should only be used if we find ourselves facing a despotic enemy, which it looks like we're probably going to be doing. I want to thank you all for listening. Tune in again tomorrow night for another episode of The Hour of the Time. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door. Hey, honey. Something's not right.
Throw out your arms.
I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. If you've got a complaint, send it back.
Get out of this house. Surrender your guns. Give me your gold. You better obey if you want to come home. Now to yourself and do what you're told.
Hillary Shalala, Reno Janet Dyke, reading the words of General Albert Pike, demonic founder of the Ku Klux Klan, engineer of the Masonic Master Plan. Pike said Lucifer is God across this land, and put his saying, take the mark in your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of uproar strike, Clinton's preparing it for another huge tax hike. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, create the panic, then rape the nation. Crisis creation. Incite black and white, program agitation.
You're surrounded by the UN in white and blue, the ATF, the men in black, from the one world order.
But it's not new. Iron Mountain, computer beasts, and cattle mutilations. Black projects, UFOs, and weird genetic combinations.